Okay.
Don't worry about it. Hey, here, just hold it. Do whatever you want.
Wait, here we go.
You know when I drink a little.
Hey, this is Paul from Smash Bros. And I want to tell you, you're listening to Danimal Planet. And Dan is the freaking greatest dude, man. I'm telling you. All right? You got to listen to him. He fucking rules. I'm sorry. That's
perfect.
So what's this? The tastiest choice moment between guys?
Welcome back to another edition of Danimal Planet Radio. Thank you for your time and thank you for tuning in today. Today's episode is really cool because it's a good friend of mine. He lives, you know, downstairs from me, but his story is incredibly fascinating to me. And being somebody that you know, travels a little bit here and there, and I get to meet some really cool, fascinating people. Jitesh Juggy, as I mentioned, I've gotten to know because he lives downstairs, but he's really a remarkable individual and performer, and his story is very unique. You know, emigrating to the United States and really just kind of creating this one-man show that he has based on his upbringing and, you know, culture and everything coming from India. It's really fascinating, and I ask you to stick around and listen to the conversation. Just an incredibly intelligent guy and just fun to be around, and just a fascinating story. So I'll keep this brief. Please stick around. Interview with Jitesh Juggy right here on Danimal Planet Radio. Segment of kind of artist spotlight. And my friend and downstairs neighbor, Jitesh Juggy, is here. I probably fucked it up.
No, it's perfect. Juggy. What's up? Juggy.
Yeah. There we go.
Jitesh Juggy. That's not my nickname. That's my last name. Or like we call in other parts of the world, my surname.
Your surname. Yes. And we like that here. In America, we say, what's your last name? But everywhere else in the world. So you're. I consider you in a performer extraordinaire because you do a lot of spoken word, you know, poetry, of course. I want to get into kind of like where that all started. Mm-hmm. First of all, congratulations on your recent citizenship of the United States.
Thank you.
I had the pleasure of attending that ceremony on Valentine's Day.
You did. Yep. I made sweet, sweet love to America.
Oh my God. That's amazing. Tell me about that experience. I mean, you've been in the United States how long? And then for that ceremony and day to take place, what was that feeling like?
Oh man, that was so special. The beginnings was hard because it took me 2 years to come to America. Wow. 2 years of trial and error and spending a lot of money on visas. By the way, you can't book a tourist visa without like booking hotels and flights. You need to show it to them.
They make you do all that, yeah.
And then you have to cancel it because my visa kept getting rejected. Thrice I got rejected. With no fault of my own, of course. My records were clear. Finally, after three times, they did approve it. I came here. I've been here for about 5 years now.
Wow.
5.5 years. Yeah.
I mean, you've we'll get to it. You've accomplished quite a bit in 5 years.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
I tell people, like, I'm in any room I go to now, I'm the youngest, freshest American. Even if I attend a two-year-old birthday party, I'm still the youngest American.
What was it, Golden Nugget, the diner?
We did.
Like, I'll have a side of fries and a bowl of soup. Hey, we got a new citizen here. Is there a 10% discount?
Yeah, I know, right? I wanted like to celebrate in an American way, and I don't do well with guns. So yeah, I was like, man, what's the second best American thing to do? It's like eat in a diner.
And you said that. You were in, what, I guess it was a courthouse? I mean, what was the building that we were in?
Yeah, it was USCIS official building, the immigration office. Yeah.
I have never been in there.
Yeah,
I've never been down
consider
there.
Consider yourself lucky. I've been there many, many times against my will.
Okay. No, that was really cool to see that. I mean, we see it in movies all the time and TV in America, but like most Americans, unless you have immigrant families and relatives coming over to sponsor or whatever, you know, I mean, my father's from Ireland, so I don't know what process he went through.
Yeah.
Basically, back then in the 50s, you were drafted in the army and you're like, oh, you're a citizen now, that totally. Kind of thing. So when you first came to America, I mean, had you been performing in India? So where are you from? Mumbai,
yeah,
right?
So yeah.
Born explain and brought a little up. Bit, you know, about that and
were you performing in India when you were growing up?
Yeah, so I grew up as a pathologically shy kid. I was not a performer. There's no artist in my family. We did not know being an artist was a career.
Yeah.
No books to read, nothing. I grew up in a very small, insular community, which I later find out, which is my show is about that. I find out that I actually grew up in a refugee camp. That's why even when people hear that you basically come from a big city in Mumbai,
yeah.
But I had a different experience in there because I was born in a very small section, cut off from the rest of the city.
Wow.
So yeah, I did not grow up as a performer. I did not grow up knowing another performer. And only when I was young, like when I started working, my first career happened to be something I'd do not say on first dates, is I was an investment banker.
Oh my God.
For 7 years.
But if you did, how would that go over? I'm an investment banker.
It comes with a lot of stereotypes. And I mean, I agree with those stereotypes. I totally do. It was very, very boring job. I was just like a very glamorous typewriter, like a typist, basically. Yeah. I did not enjoy their work at all. In my first year, I knew I didn't want to do this.
Jitesh of Wall Street.
The
wolf of Wall Street. Yeah.
It just took me 6 more years to finally quit it.
Yeah.
But while I was doing that work, it was so soul draining.
Yeah.
I wanted some sort of a release. And that's when I discovered, like, wait, I think I have some artistic tendencies. I was writing for myself.
Yeah.
And then I grew up on a certain kind of poetry from the Indian subcontinent. It's called ghazal. It's in Urdu songs, in the language of Hindi or Urdu. Wow. These are songs, but they're written as poems, and composers somehow make them into, like, you know, have a melody to it.
Fascinating.
It's just beautiful.
Having experienced any experience of other culture, there's really, I said earlier, like, as long as, if you have, unless you have immigrant parents or relatives,
yeah.
Outside of that, America doesn't have much culture. You know,
yeah.
You have to kind of create it or go to it to experience it. You know, we just experienced St. Patrick's Day here in Chicago. I mean, everywhere. But to me, I'm like, I'm not really into that part of being Irish.
Right.
The music part of it, yes. But for you to kind of bring that culture and things written as poetry and bringing them to America, like, not just did you immigrate and now become a citizen, but you kind of brought that, I don't know, not backstory, but just inspiration to another country and then continue to do it. So Suitcase Stories, let's talk about that and how you got situated with that and how that started here in Chicago.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
Any websites or anything that you can throw out as far as where they can follow you to, Instagram and everything?
Yeah, too? I'm on Instagram, Jitesh Jaggi, or you can find me as THE_PUN_DIT. So the pundit.
The pundit.
But T_PUN_DIT. But yeah, so Suitcase Stories is my first big creation. I came here and I discovered this thing called storytelling. You can go on stages and you talk about a real life experience, but it's not as much as a reading your diary on stage. You can make it artistic. You can make it fun.
Well, and you say, not to interrupt, but like you left one home to discover two more.
Yeah.
And like, where does that come from?
Yeah. So that's interesting, right? So I was telling these stories and they were like 10 minute long. And not to like be a poet again, but after a few years of telling these stories, I find these different stories talking with one another. And I'm like, oh, I've been telling these stories about different things, about cooking, about my experience being a professional dancer in India, my experience being an investment banker in India. So many different life experiences I've had, but I'm ultimately trying to convey the same two or three ideas, which was I want to belong. I want to feel part of something.
Sure.
I want to feel accepted.
That's human nature too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it took me many years to tell these different stories to be like, underneath the theme remains the same.
Right.
And I wanted to like put them together. And that's when I find out that while during the pandemic, I was stuck here. I couldn't go back home. And news reports start pouring in from India that my childhood home, my school, the place where I was, you know, brought up in, the hospital where I was born, all of them were razed to the ground. They were just demolishing it. And through these news reports, I started getting curious because they were talking about the origins of this place.
No kidding.
This place in the city of Mumbai that was not talked about because, you know, poor people live there.
Sure.
And I find out that we were refugees from a different country, from Pakistan, which was supposed to be India, but when British, we were colonized for 200 years. So before the British left, they divided the country into two countries.
You know, the Redcoats had their hand in a lot of cooking jars.
Yeah, I was reading how like every year so many countries celebrate the departure of the British from their country.
It's really, you know, I've been to South Africa. You know, it's basically Britain.
They know what's up.
And the Cape of Good Hope.
Exactly.
Down there. Yeah.
So, yeah, so they divided the country into two different countries. And basically, as wild as this sounds, Dan, my grandparents went to bed in one country, and the next morning they woke up in a different country.
It baffles me, you know, outside of America, because we have blinders on and our media, this and that, to just, again, like the depth of where you're from. And I understand a tiny part of it because my father came from another country at a very young age. You were how old when you came here?
I was in my late 20s. I mean,
you're old enough to know right from wrong and look both ways crossing the street and make a living. But you're still going to another country, another continent, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 time zones away. Where how many people did you know when you moved here?
Exactly one.
Is she downstairs?
No.
Oh, you met Divya.
I met Divya later.
Our mutual neighbor downstairs, Divya.
Just my girlfriend. I basically followed her across the continent, the globe.
Good Lord.
The kind of confidence, though, the kind of trust that I had in her. And to be fair on her, like she, you know, held her, you know, side of the bargain.
Yeah, yeah.
She was a good host and a good girlfriend. I've been hearing that.
The things we do for love. Oh, we got a leak in the room. I better take care of that. It's fascinating to me. So like suitcase stories, and I love, you know, your images, like you're running around, you know, the picture it presents, you know, in your still image. I mean, you performed the Steppenwolf. I mean, like some of the venues that you've played here in Chicago, talk about some of that. Like I see some of the places you've been playing and I'm like, wow, like that is impressive. And it's due because you've worked hard at it. You deserve to be there. But they're also like, good for you because you are on one of the biggest stages in the city.
Yeah, when I put this show together about like, the show is about my finding my place in America and seeing if I can really, really belong.
I don't even know my place in
America. Yeah, there you go, right? The only way I know how to process these things is like through art. So I was like, if I write about it, if I like tell stories about it, maybe it'll make sense. Yeah. And I thought these stories were so specific to me, but the kind of people who relate to it, you know, people from all over the country have related to it. So I kind of like brought the show about like last year in a very, very small black box theater, 40 people.
Yeah, those are great little listening rooms though.
Exactly. Yeah. That was like me kind of like trying my hand at it and people seem to really be moved by it. So I thought like maybe there's something to it.
Yeah. You
know? And I then took it to an art gallery on Michigan Avenue here in Chicago for those who are not here. That went really well. So from 40 people, I went to 80 people.
Oh
and
my
then,
gosh.
That's when somebody was in the audience and they were from the Steppenwolf Theater. I did not know.
You never know, right? Mm-hmm. Johnny Carson would typically go and hide in audiences randomly, wherever, LA, New York, wherever.
Love that.
And to discover people. So that's the beauty of what we do as performers is that you just don't know. We can do the same show every night. But it'll be a different audience, be different experiences, different feelings, highs and lows. One night your story goes over, the next night it might not. You don't know who's there. And somebody from the Steppenwolf Theater is checking you out.
The best thing is that I didn't know what Steppenwolf was.
Yeah.
This guy.
It's a band that has a bunch of songs that should be taken off the radio.
But hey, you gotta know the deep cuts.
Magic Carpet Ride or whatever their songs are. I can't listen to them.
Oh my God. Is it? I didn't even know that.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
don't
yeah.
Don't go down the rabbit hole.
Oh,
stick
yeah.
Stick with
okay.
Steppenwolf, the theater, and you'll be fine.
Let's talk about them. So, Steppenwolf, for those who don't know, it was like this working class theater, but like, you know, has its reputation built over freaking decades. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know about that because I'm still an immigrant. I'm still discovering Chicago and still discovering
America.
Which
is America. Even better. You're like so humble. Anyway,
I love it, though.
And you're on this prominent stage where people in the city would kill to perform on. And
no
like,
pressure yeah, on
no
me.
Pressure.
Because this guy calls me for a coffee and he's like, so what is the show about? I have no idea who this guy is. He's the booking agent for the theater.
Oh my gosh.
And I just like leaned back. I was like, you know, like I just like to trauma dump on people. This is like paid therapy for me. Like when people paid me for therapy. And I'm like making jokes, these stupid jokes about it. But then I get into the deep shit. Like, hey, you know, like I discover about how I grew up in a refugee camp and, you know, how my parents, my grandparents basically had to uproot themselves from a different country by threat of violence and come to a different place and settle themselves down. And all they had when they left their house was how many children could I grab?
Oh, my God.
And carry in my lap and sit on a train because we don't have time.
Yeah.
And here am I crying about like, oh, I'm an immigrant. How am I going to make do? And that gives me inspiration. Like yeah. I come from a lineage of immigrants, lineage yeah. of these chameleons who were like, we are just going to fit in wherever we are. Right.
Unbelievable.
So I'm talking about all of this to this guy and he's like, please do this at our place. And I go back and I tell my partner like, hey, by the way, Steppenwolf is interested. And she's like, who? I'm like, Steppenwolf. And she's like, do you mean Steppenwolf? And I'm like, I think so. And she's like, listen, sit down. People move to Chicago to be close to this theater.
Yes.
Please give it your all.
Yes.
So that's how it began.
I think it's phenomenal. I mean, what about some, I mean, we all have moments and it's challenging and of course, but like we wouldn't be doing it if we didn't love it.
Yeah.
And the old adage, you know, if you do what you love, it won't feel like work for a day or whatever. That
totally.
I totally fucked that up. But I mean, are there any moments of performing that stick out that are like challenges for you where people always ask, you know, musicians or whatever, do you ever think of a moment where you'd quit and walk away? And it's like, well, we're human.
Yeah.
Every goddamn day. You're just
Absolutely.
Like, I'm done. I'm not doing this shit anymore.
Absolutely.
But like, we love it. It's who we are. What, especially only being in America for a handful of years, like you're adjusting to new audiences,
yeah.
you're adjusting to new cultures, and,
yeah.
and maybe your humor takes a minute to get over. Your accent takes a minute for people to
Absolutely.
Absorb. I mean, you're enduring challenges way, like I said in my kitchen here, like you're going through way more than what Americans would do. That Americans grew up in this culture. Society that won't even take the challenges
yeah.
and go after what you're doing from another country, which I think
yeah.
is admirable to the sky and back.
I mean, think about all the references you know. That's how humor works. You play around with references. All the references you have, people don't have those. And the references that they have, you don't know what that is. You don't know. I just learned who Johnny Carson is recently. You know what I mean? But like, people talk about it. Americans understandably talk about it like it's nothing.
Sure.
And for me, it's like I have to go back and dig in and do the research,
yeah.
emerge, and then make it into art, make it into
sure.
humor, make
like
it
you
into
said,
stories.
Your partner from here or whatever clearly knew what Steppenwolf was. Like,
exactly.
Hey,
yeah.
by the way,
yeah.
This is a big deal.
Totally. So I think like that was my work. But after I did the show first, like you said, it's called Suitcase Stories. It's like me carrying
I love
my
the name.
Yeah, I bring my. I came here with two suitcases, and it's one of them was filled with clothes, another and books, and another one was with stories. So yeah, I come here and I do this show. You know, like after working on it for 4 years, 4.5 years, and when I first did that, it was only just stories, just verbal, oral tradition storytelling, which is not new to America. You know, Native Americans have lived here. They have passed on their culture, which oral tradition, oral storytelling. Mm. And it's not, I'm not new to that either. Like in India, our scriptures were passed down by verbal oral storytelling. But I also understand this is 2023, 2024. People's attention spans are very, very small. It's the TikTok generation, right?
Oh, boy.
So they can't scroll me. They can't swipe me. And I don't want to stand in front of them for an hour just talking to them.
Yeah.
So you talked about like what was the challenge. So that was my challenge. Even though, you know, people were didn't mind like stories, but I didn't want to mix it up.
Sure.
That's when... So in India, there was a very short period of time when I was an investment banker. I took interest in dancing because I just wanted some release.
Yes.
And I am part of the cohort of some of the first break dancers in India.
No.
Weirdly enough. Kidding. And for after I quit my job, I became a full-time dancer for a minute.
Good for you.
And this show got me out of retirement because I wanted to experiment. What were other formats of story, telling a story that people can be moved by?
Yeah.
So at one point in this show, I stopped telling stories with my words. I just start telling a story with my body, with my movements. And then I immediately, abruptly start telling stories with my words.
I love it.
And I never explain what happened in between. I trust the audience to know, to feel.
Correlate the line between.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And
I love
they always know what I'm trying to tell them.
Because the audience also wants to be challenged.
Thank you. Yes. You
know, lyrically, if we're singing a song or you're performing it with body, like it's okay that they draw up their own interpretation of what we're doing. You know, I make a living singing other people's songs.
Exactly.
But I still take different meaning. You know, people can be like, hey, look, this song, whoever wrote whatever song can say, this is about this.
Yeah.
Well, that's about that for you because you wrote it and got, you know, that's great. But other people can listen to it and take on their own meaning to it.
Completely.
And for you to be doing more expressive
storytelling.
I think it leaves it more wide open because you're not speaking. You're not infiltrating their minds.
Yeah.
Almost kind of, this may be the wrong word to use, manipulating them because now their minds are going, okay, you could just throw your left arm a certain way and it might positively trigger somebody's, oh, he's doing that. Oh, this reminds me of this. Nobody ever leaves, in my opinion, a show, concert, performance in a bad mood.
Yeah.
Unless you've had too much to drink or bad smoke or whatever, or got into a fight. Don't mosh pit at a spoken word concert.
Yeah. Not many of those. But yeah, totally, totally. Like, I think, you know, you touch upon that. Like, we have to, I think new performers, one thing that they don't necessarily appreciate is you have to respect the intelligence of the audience and know that they feel and understand more than you do give them credit for.
Sure.
And it helps me that English is my fourth language.
So I'm sorry, that again?
English is my fourth language, so I don't care about relying on words too much. You know, it comes easy to me to not take it for granted.
Fourth language.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember a minute ago I said, I'm still trying to find my place in America? And now you're... I know like some Spanish, you know. I don't know any Gaelic, you know, it's kind of, but no, that's just incredible. But again, that's, to me, it's fascinating. And I know people in our country are fascinated by, you know, foreigners and immigrants and because of culture, but you know, with Divya and you downstairs where it's like, it's, and I've grown up with, you know, not lack of a better word, like brown friends.
Sure.
Like there, I've heard that more in the community of like, Brown people. And I always thought, like, I never wanted to say that because like I thought it was derogatory. But you talk to each other as brown.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh.
Very proudly so. Totally.
Yeah, great.
And the thing about language is like, language and words are so, I mean, this is my bread and butter, right? Language and words. But I still don't put too much importance on it because it's so limited. You're a musician. The way what you do in between your verses, you are still communicating, you're still talking to your audience. Mm-hmm. It's just through a chord.
Sure.
It's just through, you know, different medium.
Right.
That is so expansive than English or Spanish or Gaelic could ever be, right?
I love that you use the word medium because I always think of like spiritual and go, you know, like, I'm yeah, like, what totally. Is there new a medium here? Like, I want, I'm very in tune with that.
Stay tuned.
When I came into this apartment the first time, you know, or anything else, I walked in by myself and I said like a prayer or whatever. I was like, look, whoever and whatever is here, I come in peace.
I like, bow down to
this
you.
This is my home now. I want to coexist with you. So
Dan has a black cat, by the way.
Yes, and he crosses my path every goddamn chance he gets. But I'm like, I tell the mediums, and I'm like, hey, if you want the coffee or the sugar on this shelf, don't knock it off.
It's here.
Just, I'll put it wherever you want it. That's funny.
Sorry. Totally. Yeah, but like we are all storytellers, and we communicate with so much more than just words. And that was my idea of like, if I'm going to like go to like newer and better venues, not better, but like, you know, different venues, I am going to keep challenging myself and change and shift the perspective and change the show a little bit.
Tweaking is the best.
So I can have fun too.
Part about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard one of my idols is Neil Diamond. Great American singer from Brooklyn, respect. New York. And, you know, just iconic. And he was on Larry King,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is several years ago. This is late 90s, early 2000s. And Larry goes, you know, probably asks everybody this question. But Neil gave an answer that really stuck out to me kind of early in my performance career.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, like, you know, who are you doing this for? You know, like, what are you doing this for? And Neil said something about, like, I'm paraphrasing, you know, respectfully, mm-hmm. like, I'm doing this for myself.
Mm.
Like, I learned at a very young age, and I've had other elder entertainers tell me this. You have to entertain yourself first.
Yeah.
Because if you're up there acting like a stick in the mud, nobody else is going to enjoy.
Yeah.
Now, we've had moments. I mean, I've been on stage. My back is, you know, my, or I sound so old now. I started with my back. Oh, my back is hurting me.
The favorite conversation topics of the 40s and 30s.
I've been sick as a dog. I've been like, where is the note going to come from? You just have to create this note. You know, you have to sing. You can't get up there and be a schmuck. But it happens. We're human. But you have to, the audience has to see you enjoying what you're doing in order for them to enjoy it. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't get that. And it's sad because I look at shows all the time and I'm like, that motherfucker is checking it in right now. He's phoning it in. And it's like, these good people have paid money. That's why I said, like, nobody leaves a show in a bad mood unless something like that happens, or unless you're Axl Rose and you start a riot and you know.
That everybody understands.
Yes.
No, but like, I want to spend a second with this. This is, we're hitting something deep. So, it is so interesting because there's this thing about a lot of performers think, especially newcomers or, you know, even the oldies, you know, but you can tell that this performer is trying so hard to relate to the audience or trying to make their content relatable, their music, their stand-up routine, whatever it is,
stretching,
right?
Stretching
it. They're really trying to like appeal to the common denominator, and the audience knows that.
Right.
At least any discerning audience knows that. Here's the thing though.
It's not authentic.
It's the irony of this business is that the more specific you make your art to yourself, the more universal it is. I don't know how, but I'll tell you, growing up on the streets of Mumbai, I was nodding my head to listening to like, you know, like people, like these black people rapping on the streets of Compton. I'm on the streets of Mumbai. I feel like these people are like right here on the on the street next to me, you know? But these people are talking about like police brutality and racial segregation and things like that. I have no context for this. I have not seen a black man in my life.
Yeah.
And somehow Tupac Shakur or whoever it was I was listening to, I'm like, I fuck with this.
Yeah.
And I keep that in my psyche when I come here is like, the more I do this for myself, the more every single person in the audience is going to walk away thinking that this is for them.
100% agree with you.
Sure.
That, I mean, and for you, because I don't have this perspective, so I appreciate you explaining it the way you just did, because now I have other questions. I have all these questions. I'm a student of life, you know? I want questions. I don't want to have the answers.
Yeah.
I want to hear the answers
if
somebody has an answer. I don't want to be the guy that everybody comes to. I just like, hey, what about this? What about this? Mm-hmm. You mentioned Tupac and Compton and everything. Growing up in India, it's something we never hear also.
Yeah.
When I grew up on the streets of Mumbai, like, you don't hear anybody say that.
Yeah.
Like, that was like quote of the day for me. But like, did you have what American influences did you have growing up? What access did you have to YouTube or Spotify or what? I don't know what was around 5-6 years ago. Like, yeah. what reached you over there to of course lead you to where you're at now? Like, what was there an early inspiration of a performer, a stand-up or an actor or somebody that said, I want to get into this?
That's a really good question. So there's two different answers. One is that growing up, it was completely different. And then the advent of internet came and it was completely different. But before internet, you know, like, we got our first connection like 2008, 2009. So before that, America, I kid you not, Dan, was New York for all of us.
Of course.
Every movie we watch, Hollywood movie, there's New York. And to me,
New York is amazing.
To me, America is New York. Like, there's no farmlands, there's no Nebraska, everything is negated. It's just New York. That's how we thought. It was a country of everybody's famous somehow. Everybody's super mad rich.
That's what you see, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because the loudest elements of it make it to other countries, right?
You know, and that's a quick pause. I say to people, like, you know, I love London. I idolize London.
Sure.
I love, my father's from Dublin, just an hour west flight. So it's a far swim. But I'm like, man, we should be so lucky in America on an international stage, which most Americans don't view because America, fuck yeah. We should be so lucky that we have New York City in America because of, look, it reached you.
Yeah.
And now we are graced and lucky to have you in Chicago, of course.
Totally.
New York's great.
Totally.
But Chicago's amazing. Mm. But because of New York, you're now in Chicago.
Totally. And back then, I thought, when the first time I heard it, I thought Chicago was a sports team. I didn't even know it was a city.
Well, I will say they are putrid. And, every sports team in this city right now is pathetic. That's another
podcast. We digress, yes.
We'll do that another time.
Totally, yeah. But like, oh my God. But today, represent, I feel like I'm from Chicago. Chicago is the greatest city in the world.
This is your home and we love you.
This is absolutely my home. I fully, wholeheartedly represent Chicago. Everywhere I go, I travel all over the country.
You enjoyed the Super Bowl here.
There you go. For the first time.
For the first time.
I had my first, for the listeners, I had my first Italian beef sandwich with Dan, and he did a great fucking job.
You.
I would not have
that
it any
you know
other way.
Of. As that
well,
the first one.
Yeah.
I do a good Italian.
I have no comparison, but I still feel it's best.
Yeah. I like to make pasta at home, but I do it for myself, and I'm sure if others ate it, they'd be like, "Fuck is."
But this? I do have experience with other cities. I travel a lot. I teach storytelling now. I'm going to Raleigh,
North Carolina
tomorrow. Okay. Yeah, to teach storytelling.
Wait, did you say tomorrow?
Yeah.
Oh my God! What time's your flight?
Tomorrow at noon.
Don't worry, this podcast will only last another 80 minutes.
No, but totally, like, I've been all over the country now, and Chicago, honestly, greatest city in the world, man.
I love hearing that because I haven't been to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to be arrogant.
Totally, yeah. I say this with a little boastful.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, like, I've been to a handful of international juggernaut.
Sure, yeah.
South America, Europe, Chicago, from then you gather what other people say, having been all over the world. And Chicago really is regarded as the best summer city in the world, you know. Yeah, we lose a few points in the winter, but we've had pretty good winters here.
You just pretend it doesn't exist, but yeah.
Satisfy your barbecue craving by stopping into one of Chicago's finest, located at 1720 North California Avenue in Humboldt Park. Enjoy your favorite classics, Chicago style, done the offset way. Ribs, beef brisket that melts in your mouth. Wings smoked to perfection. Smoked brisket chili, pork, chicken, cornbread, baby back rib sandwiches, smoked sausage, and more. Even try their homemade ice cream sandwiches. Call them about their amazing catering packages and private gatherings. 773-360-7753. Put out the fire in your hunger and head into Offset Barbecue in Humboldt Park, 1720 North California, and online offsetbbq.com.
And I want to get into real quick, please. You know, you're going to Raleigh, which is a beautiful area, the Carolinas and the East Coast.
My first time tomorrow, yeah.
Really? Okay, yeah. Great. You're teaching storytelling. Yeah. Like, how did you get into that? What do you sit down in a classroom of however many people, and they got their pen and paper or their video cameras? Where do you start?
So this is interesting.
And like, how old are they? Because like, you're teaching people to be storytellers, I assume, verbally.
Yes.
In this day and age.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Good luck, buddy.
And here's the thing, right? Like, you can use storytelling in so many different contexts. Like,
well, like you said, you're using your body.
Yeah,
you're telling a story without speaking.
And even in different, like I said, like different contexts. Like, you could be on a first date and you could bore the fuck out of your first date, right? Or you could be an interesting storyteller.
I usually do. Yeah.
No, but for real, like, right? Like, you could do that when you're pitching to an investor. Pitching to a senior, to a peer. You are at a bar trying to like hold court with a bunch of friends. You can use stories. This is the earliest, oldest art form, right? Yeah. All we had was our stories. And this particular context, however, I now teach scientists to humanize their research.
Gosh.
I basically teach scientists to talk about what they dedicate their whole lives to in understandable, believable, trustworthy ways to the general public.
Incredible.
Yeah, totally. Like, we don't have...
You've been downstairs this whole time, and I'm just now hearing about this.
No, for real,
We sit out on the stoop and have a drink and a smoke, like, what the hell?
It's my upbringing. We don't talk about yourself, right? Like, you're Irish, you're like, you know what's up. But yeah, totally, like... you know, there is this thing, we you know, like being here for a few years, I learned like people don't become skeptics about, for example, vaccines because there isn't enough information about vaccines. Mm-hmm. There is plenty information if you Google, right? And we can antagonize them all we want. You know, these are not bad people. These are just people who... instead of listening to scientists, they're listening to their neighbors. Mm-hmm. We can't fault them for that, man.
No. Right? Like I said earlier, human nature.
It's human nature.
You know, it's a domino effect of the surroundings around
exactly. us. Exactly. We are a product of our environment.
Exactly.
Totally. Now, I am on the side of science before people attack me, right? But I don't want to villainize people who don't believe scientists simply because they grew up, say, in rural Nebraska, and their neighbor tells them, hey, the vaccine causes autism. Have you heard of that? So these are stories because people believe and understand stories than they do facts, stats, figures, you name it.
You and I could eat 5 donuts and it's going to affect us differently.
Exactly.
Mine are going to stick around for several months. You know what I mean? Like, that's the beauty about life, and that's what, like, we're so used to human interaction and just going about our days, usually these days with our heads down.
Yeah.
This is what I love about what I do and traveling and meeting people and just absorbing the energy
With their music.
Of people around on and off the stage. Is that, like, we're not all from the same country.
Yes.
We're not all from the same... Like I said earlier, like
neighborhood,
we could do the same show 5 times in a row, and it'll have five different results.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Totally.
So like, life is all about possibility, but you have to be open to it.
Absolutely. So I actually really, really, really respect these scientists for they understand the challenge in front of them. Mm-hmm. The challenge in front of them is not a deficit of information. Oh, we just need to dump enough information on people and they'll know what's right.
Yeah.
They understand that people are listening to their neighbors telling these stories about these misinformed stories sometimes.
Yep.
So what scientists are now learning, like, hey, I guess we don't need to like hide behind our research. We need to talk about our research in terms of stories. Why did I get interested in improving the lives of people?
Yes.
Why do I care about people's... Why do I care about public health? So that's where somebody like me comes in, who is not a scientist, is far away from science, but understands people.
Yes.
And that's when I try to teach them, like, hey, if you tell people where you come from, why you care about people's health and people being disease-free so much, maybe they will trust you and they will listen to you and they will follow through on what you have to offer to them. In this case, a vaccine, for example.
Wow. Okay. That's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
That perspective right there. And do you recall, I mean, obviously, you were of age, you know, in your area of India and that part of the world, as far as like tourism, did you notice a lot of, you know, American or just like, you know, more white, Western, because a lot of parts of India and that part of the world, you got to get a vaccine. I remember going to South Africa back in 2004. People would go like, what are you doing going to Africa without a vaccine? Oh, and I'm just like, I was not told I needed one. Like, I'm just going to another country. I know there are parts of the world where, you got to worry about malaria and stuff like that. But like, what's it like in your part of the world, in Mumbai especially? Are there a lot of tourists?
Yeah, totally. And this is such a good question because I had not grown up seeing a...
No. I haven't grown up either.
Go ahead.
Just kidding.
All I knew was people around me, right?
Yeah.
We are not a homogenous country like Japan is. Like, India is extremely diverse as Europe is. Even more, I'll say. Every 200 miles, like, the language changes, the accent changes, the dressing changes.
That's incredible.
The food changes.
Yeah.
You will feel like you're in a different country.
We have a lot of that here, too, in the States. Yeah. Not 200 miles.
Yeah.
5 or 6.
Totally.
Yeah, you go down to the south side or you go to the north side, you go down to Alabama, you're going to get a little...
No, but it's like so diverse. But like, you know, like, I did not see a black or a white or a, you know, a Mexican person, for example, right? So the only exposure I had when I had like, you know, I was in my 20s. And interestingly, I saw my first tourists. And there was this movie in America, made in America, called... Slumdog Millionaire.
Oh, I heard. I was going to ask you about Lion as well.
I live right next to that area.
Really?
Yep, that area is called Dharavi. I live right next to it called Sion. But Dharavi is an area where people, because that movie came out, it became very famous. And people do tours of that neighborhood. It's basically the biggest slum in Asia.
Okay.
But what looks from the outside as these makeshift shacks...
Yeah.
Is when you go inside, it's a thriving ecosystem where every household there's an entrepreneur. People are weaving baskets. People are sewing your clothes. People are making leather jackets that gets sold in thousands of dollars by American designers or French designers.
Mm-hmm.
They get manufactured in those slums. So these people were like, wait a second, they're making movies about our life. Might as well cash in. These are entrepreneurs after all. So what they do is they organize tours. You go to Mumbai, you can do these slum tours where you pay some money and they will take you home from home, center from center, and they'll show you the entrepreneurial nature.
Hey, good.
People surviving and making something out of nothing and supporting these billion-dollar industries of fashion, manufacturing all over the world, especially America, that has its origins in these slums. So that was my first exposure to tourists from America.
Really?
That's where I met my American girlfriend, too. She was taking a tour in Dharavi.
No kidding.
Yep.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just never know.
You never know who is in the audience, like the Steppenwolf Theater.
I mean, like, so let's circle back to that. Like, you know, you've done that. Like, what's on your radar now in Chicago? Like, what haven't you done?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the sky is the limit, of course.
Completely.
Because we are in the best city in the world, I think, because of music, acting, comedy, film.
Mm-hmm.
We can enjoy all facets of entertainment.
Totally.
Just like, and I think you would agree with this. You see the word entertainment and you're just like, how can I help?
Yeah.
Like, it's just full of vowels and excitement and I just want to be a part of it. It's like a flickering light when you're starving and you're driving down the highway and you see open.
Yeah.
And you're like, we got to go there.
Yeah.
Like, that's, we're drawn to entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
What's next? What's on your radar right now? Like, what haven't you... What room or what, like, where do you want to take Suitcase Stories? You're teaching storytelling, like, you want to combine everything into just one big ball of fun.
Yeah.
Where is your ideal performance and venue in Chicago?
That's a good question.
Besides this podcast.
I am very lucky that I could like climb a few rings of stairs and upstairs.
You went up a flight of stairs.
Up a flight of stairs.
You're climbing up in the world, my friend.
Oh my God, I'm totally doing it. This is metaphorical.
Are you going to be okay going home tonight? Could you text me when you get home?
Yes, in like 15 seconds. Yeah. By the way, we were supposed to do this segment for like 15 minutes.
Yeah, too bad.
The clock is ticking 43 minutes.
It's its own podcast. No, people need to hear this. No, like I said about the DJ segment, I'll figure that out. This is now, you are your own podcast. So I'm glad we're doing this because it was wrong of me to like try to put a time frame on it because I didn't want to be like, hey, come on up here. It's going to take 20 minutes because right. I don't want to like waste your time and everything. I did another podcast with Randy Johnson. He's like a famous American baseball pitcher.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he asked me when he first started, like we were off mic, but I was recording. And he goes, hey, how long is this going to take? And I go, 20 minutes, however long you want it. It took an hour.
There you go.
Because he just kept divulging and explaining things. I'm like, I'm not going to interrupt you, but you know, so this is great.
I'm the Randy Johnson of storytelling. So, no, but totally.
Randy Brownson.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Oh, my God. He had to do that.
That's terrible.
He could not let that be.
I thought about it for a second. There was a pause.
He was like, should I?
The hamster was running on the wheel. And it's like, oh, Dan's thinking. What happens when Dan thinks?
I could see the wheels turning.
Oh, it was terrible. No, totally. So sorry. I've offended your people. Sorry.
No, totally. No, I love that. So there isn't I don't want to restrict myself to a venue, you know.
Sure, of course.
In terms of venue, like Second City is in the works. So I'm going to bring back my show in the summer, July, hopefully, of 2024, you know, because my story is changing. The show is changing.
Of course, it's evolving,
can't with good faith do this show. You know, today I'm not in a relationship. I'm single. I don't want to like mislead the audience. I want to be truthful.
Okay, that's a great point. You don't want, in not a disrespectful sense, and I know you don't mean it that way, you don't want an outside influence to restrict something from your performance.
Totally.
Because I've been in that position in the past where I wouldn't sing a certain song that I wrote, perhaps maybe about somebody else. For fear of having to answer later, what was that song about? Why is that in your show?
Totally.
You know, she's not in your life anymore. Why is that song? It's like, can I just do my job?
Exactly. So
you know,
I can do that, or I can like do this in good faith, good fidelity, and be like
for the audience.
Exactly.
For yourself, but for the audience.
I want to be my true, real self on stage, not a mask on, right?
Oh, that's
so
a great
for
point.
That, I needed to take some time off and process what's the new changes in my life and reflect that in my writing, in my stories, and get back on stage and like be like, hey, this is me right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that might not be what I am
a
year before,
self.
A year after.
It's your truest self.
It's my truest self, right?
And that's all the audience can ask for.
And they see it.
Yes.
They know what that feels like.
People aren't. I mean, we've got some morons walking around.
Sure.
But no, but like the world is, people are pretty smart and
yeah,
in tune.
Storytelling and poetry audience is usually either they're like super progressive NPR listening, or like queer people, or people of color, or people who are allies, or, you know, like who are interested in stories other than their own, who care about people other than their own.
People that are interested in culture.
Thank you. Yes. So I think like they appreciate if I show up as my true self.
Yes.
So it's not about the venue I'm doing it in or the city I'm doing it in. I think what I want to do is kind of bring stories to life and acknowledge that we all are so desperate in sharing our stories. People will get into fucking relationships just to be able to share your stories. How pathetic and beautiful and fragile is that?
The world needs to be more vulnerable.
Exactly.
And you
don't need to get into a relationship or a new job to be able to share your stories.
Because what happens if you, say you meet somebody, not in a relationship setting,
sure,
you just
sure,
meet, everything is a relationship. I get that.
Yeah.
Everything is a relationship.
you're interacting, energies are and people are flowing past mm-hmm. each other. But just like you and I, say we met at the airport bar tonight, and I guarantee you, if I met you tonight, we'd still be doing a podcast no matter what.
We would,
because I love you, and I love your energy too, and I love your story. But just like people need to be more vulnerable, and what's the worst that could happen? You don't see that person ever again. But you were your truest self in that moment with them. And that's what I thrive on the most. Mm. That's why I'm like, hey, I got a million fucking friends all over the world. Because of that, I, you know, whether I see them or not again or not, I don't, not that I don't care. Of course, hey, good to see you again.
Yeah.
Hope you're doing well. Totally. But if I don't see you again, you got the best of me right then and there.
Oh, in that
but
moment.
But most people miss that.
That's all life is, like a collection of moments. So if I can give somebody a moment of me, a true me, and in the end, at the end of the show, every show, I do this thing called Story Circle, where I stop the show is ended, and I'm like, this is just the end of my story. And then I kind of like turn the mic around, and then we spend half an hour.
Yeah.
And I open the stage up to the floor, audience.
Yeah.
So after this audience spends like 60 minutes hearing my story,
I love it.
I ask them, now think about the themes that emerge from this story for you. Themes of longing, themes of visceral missing somebody, themes of missing food, themes of feeling left out, whatever that might be. And now supply your own stories to that. And you would be shocked that, Dan, in the first 5 minutes, there is like silence.
Of course.
And I bear that.
Waiting
and
for
then
walls to break down.
There's like 60 hands up.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, your story reminded me of like, you know, when I was moving
houses.
They don't
want to be the first one.
Yeah, totally.
Nobody wants to be the first one on
and
the dance floor.
And then we have to like be like, hey, sorry, the venue's going to kick us out.
Yeah.
People are so adorably desperate to share their stories.
Yes. And that's like, I sympathize with them. You know, I'm the youngest of seven kids. Mm. And I, you know, the reason I talk to my therapist about it and I joke around and I go, this is why I make a living with a microphone. Because nobody, you know, nobody ever listened to me growing up.
Oh, man.
And he would say to me like, well, you know, you joke around about that a lot. And he goes, let's talk about that. And we did. And he goes, there's more to it than just that. But like,
this is so funny.
You can relate to that.
Then I saw a stand-up comedy show. I forgot the name of the guy. His name is Gary somebody. But he starts the show, the whole 1 hour special on Amazon Prime with, hey, you know what? This show and every one man show or one person show could have been named, do you see this, Mom?
Yeah. Because, look at me.
Yeah, look at me, Mom.
Look at me.
Right? Like, because we are people who grew up feeling a lack of validation.
Yeah.
And you can make it tragic, or you can make it like, oh, well, I get to do that now on my own terms.
Oh, dude, I'm 45 years old. I have identified the fact that
totally.
I seek too much validation from others.
And also, and I recognize that others feel the same as you do.
Yeah.
It's not that rare. People want to feel heard. Like I said, people literally, again, no, I'm not judging. I'm one of them. But people will get into relationship. People will get into a new job.
Yeah.
People will go into a new country just to be able to share their true, real stories and feelings.
Yes. And that's why I have a cat, because they are assholes and they make us work for it every day. And that's why I love about cats. Please give your contact info again. This has been absolutely amazing. Your time. I love you. Thank you for your time. And I will walk you home.
That'll take a total of 7 seconds, by the way.
I always like to say, like, it was 15 feet coming up here, but it'll be 30 going home.
I have risen in life. So my name is Jitesh, but in America, it's pronounced as Jitesh, which is very sexy. I'm Jitesh.
I'm
going to
slow it down when I order it or edit it.
You got to lick your lips before you say my name.
Tonight, my guest was from Mumbai. Jitesh.
How do you like my accent? No, but my name is Jitesh Jaggi. You can find me on Instagram as Jitesh Jaggi or The Pundit with a couple of underscores there. The underscore pun underscore dit, because I do have a lot of puns under my in my back pocket. But anyway, please follow me on Instagram. Please find me. You can Google my name, Jitesh Jaggi, and I'm sure something will pop up.
Yeah.
But get in touch with me. And I would love to see people who are listening here at my shows. And even if you don't, you will hear my stories. And I would love to hear your story.
Well, especially in Chicago.
Especially in Chicago, but also all over the world. Dan is one of my closest, dearest people I really, really hold dear in my heart, because Dan does not try to act cool. And he has all the reasons to be, because this is a musician who has performed all over the world. But when I'm with Dan, he's like real. And thanks. He's himself. He's his messy, ugly, beautiful, full of faults, full of flaws, full of delight self. And if you are that person, I would love to hear your story. And yeah, like, I hope our paths cross, like my and Dan's cross.
I'm going to edit all of this out at the end. I will take no compliments.
You dare not. You dare not.
Dude, I love you. Thank you so much.
I love you, my
dude,
brother.
Your time, I value the most. And thank you for all of that. So.
Appreciate it.
Well, and there you have it. You know, pretty cool story and backstory from Jitesh. One of the things that I admire about him, it's even more fascinating to me that, you know, he wasn't a performer in India. And he had these like aspirations of like, you know, coming to America and like, oh, I wanna perform at Carnegie Hall. You know, he came to America and then developed this knack, and this, you know, he took his story and his upbringing and you know, the refugee camps and everything. Like, I didn't know anything about that. Like, I don't know much. I'm not educated in that region of the world, you know? And we all hear about it, we all know, you know, and now that I know it's okay to say, you know, respectfully, like, hey, we have brown friends, that just his upbringing and culture and the history, especially, you know, from Mumbai, you know, we've all heard about Mumbai and parts of the world there. So it's extra fascinating to me. And so please follow him. Just an absolutely incredible person to be around one-on-one. And I cannot wait to see him perform his show and future shows, any other collections of works that he puts together. The sky's the limit for him. And I'm grateful to know him, and I'm grateful for his time. So Jitesh, thank you very much. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as him and I enjoyed sitting and chatting with each other right here on Danimal Planet Radio. Thank you.